Thanks, John. Good to be here with you this morning. Glad you made it this morning. This is a little bit different talk for me than those of you seen me in the past. I've shared a lot with potassium nutrition and nitrogen work, fertilizer additives, but I thought I'd use this time this morning to share with you three projects. I am an extension specialist, and I get approached with a lot of different new ideas, etc. I thought I'd just share with you three projects I got involved this year. Don't have a lot of time to go into a lot of detail on any one of them, but we'll do our best here. Before I forget or run out of time, I do want to say I am supported by the Georgia Cotton Commission, by the Georgia Plant Food Educational Society, and also Waters Laboratory runs a lot of my samples. The first of the three projects I wanted to share with you is it's a company called Omnia. They have a product they call Top Flow, and basically it's a super fine liquid lime. It's a calcium carbonate. The way I understand it, this is not your grandfather's liquid lime, though. This is not, I don't have a lot of experience with the old liquid limes, but I understand they were just super fine limes in suspension. Sometimes they had to bubble them to keep them agitated so they wouldn't settle out, etc. This one, they say, is different because it's very super fine. I forget the exact fineness. It's like 90 microns or something. And they tell me they use it to make paper white. I thought they just bleached paper, but they say they put a fine coat of this fine lime on to make paper white, for white paper. So we designed a study, a very simple, straightforward study. I do all my stuff, four replications on cotton, four rows wide, 40 foot long. I used a rig that we used to simulate putting stuff out through the pivot. And again, this stuff was very fine. We had no problems going through. This system is just a couple tanks, a battery, and a little electric pump. You see that's a flood tip nozzle. This stuff went out fine. And that is on conventional till. I actually did it conventional and strip till on cotton. Again, wanted to keep the treatments down. I had no idea if this product would work. You know, the initial first cut, like a good extension guy, take a first cut at it with simple study, just untreated. And then I had lime, and I used dolomitic lime at 2,000 pounds per acre. And then this top flow at 166 gallons per acre, which is the rate they said should be equivalent to a ton of lime. And conventional strip till. You can see the strip till is interesting. This is a heavy rye strip till, rolled down, strip tilled in. We only treated over the center two rows, and I got to tell you, I was really concerned about that lime getting down the soil when you see it looked like it got really hung up on the residue. But when you look at the data, it was kind of interesting. And there's more separation there than you think. I could have condensed the scale to make it look better. But basically, we took soil samples at planting before we applied the treatments, 2, 4, 8, 12, 16, 20, and 24 weeks after planting. And you'll notice that we started here at the same. And then right away, you notice this did bring up, this is the top flow, the liquid lime did bring it up from just under 6 up to 7 in 2 weeks. And the amazing part to me is it held it all through the season. A lot of times we say that fine lime will bring it up quick, then will drop on you fast, whereas other things won't. The blue line here is the regular dolomitic lime. This was regular brown, this wasn't fine lime. Dolomitic lime, and you can see it took a little while to come up, and it separated out. It's right in the middle. By the way, these were all statistically different, I think, at every sampling point. And I always lose my cursor when I do this. I don't know why.
It's hard.
Yeah, but the bottom line you can see is the untreated check started below 6, and scooted around and stayed below. So kind of interesting to me. By the way, we did take all the samples to 6-inch depth. We didn't try to go 2 and 6. Also in that rye residue, we try to kick the residue to the side so we weren't getting what's hung up in the residue and get the soil. Tried to do a good job, but my first cut looking at this, and again, we did apply that lime and then till it into about the top 4 inches in the conventional till study. If you look at the strip till, it looked a little different. Actually, the top flow, the liquid lime, did the same as far as it brought the pH up very good in the first 2 weeks and seemed to hold. But what really surprised me is look at the blue line, the regular dolomitic lime. It actually statistically didn't separate out from the untreated check for a long time. I think it did a couple in the later samplings, and I really don't know how to explain that. I was worried about the liquid lime not getting down to the soil, but we had plenty of rain this year, and this was even irrigated. So I'm not really sure how to explain that. We normally think about a tunnel line should take you up about a half a point pH. Also, by the way, our target pH is 6.0 on cotton, although a lot of our guys like to go to 6.5, which is fine. It's anywhere between 6 and 6.5. I'm not even going to show you the yield data. There was actually no differences in yield. We made decent yield, I think like 1,200 pound. I was actually worried about the top flow with a lot of calcium, no magnesium, maybe tying up some magnesium or competing with magnesium and having, but we didn't have, I took tissue samples and we didn't have any issues, and we even made decent yields on where we didn't lime. And again, we're not that far below 6. So that was the lime study. We'll look at this again this year now that we know it does seem to work. Might compare it to fine lime. The interesting thing with this is we do know it's fast. We think we can put it through the pivot. I'm pretty sure we can put it through the pivot. We're putting more things through the pivot these years. We're putting nitrogen fertilizers, calcium on peanut. Cost, that's the big thing. I have a feeling it's going to be fairly expensive, but we'll have to wait and see. And then again, on peanuts, a lot of our cotton growers also grow peanuts, and we're looking at it as a calcium source on peanut too. All right, so that was the liquid lime. The second project I want to share with you, I refer to as my Walmart waste study. It's a product they call Ready Grow by a company called Viridian. And if you didn't know, Walmart is really emphasizing the green movement, going green. They started with a carbon footprint, and now they're emphasizing nutrient management. They want all their suppliers to be good stewards of fertilizers. That's one of the reasons TFI is pushing the 4R, et cetera. But the interesting thing is this company got the contract to take all the waste produce, fruit and citrus and bakery items that don't get sold. And they collect them and they grind them up and they make cattle feed out of the silos. They actually locate their processing thing on big cattle farms in North Florida and South Georgia, and they make the cattle feed out of the silos. Well, when they do that, they end up with a liquid left over. And I think pretty sure somebody was looking around and going, hey, this liquid probably is pretty good stuff. It's got probably good soil amendment, got nutrients in it. They told me to think of it as V8. Well, they sent it to me, and I can tell you what it looks and smells like ain't V8. And let's just put it this way, and I didn't come up with this, but my technician and my student worker refer to this as the vomit study, okay? We're just coming off of breakfast, so I don't want to go into too much detail, but it's not good stuff. Real simple, untreated and treated. I know for a fact that I didn't even try to put it out through that flood tip system because I know it would clog it. I bought a watering can with pretty big holes that the spout, and actually took an 8-inch drill bit and drilled it out, and it still clogged it. Okay, and you can see in the bucket that's after dilution. I think it's the citrus pulp that's getting that in this product. The analysis is 44,918 pounds of NP205 and K2O per 1,000 gallon. So I thought, yeah, we put it out 1,000 gallon, we're gonna do all right. They said, no, we think you can put it out a 30 gallon. Well, if you do the math, I did my math right, that's about a pound of N, 0.3 P205 and 0.6. You're not getting a lot of nutrient. All right, so what's it do as a soil amendment? I don't think it did a whole lot. You got the untreated check and treated yields down there. CV is a little higher than I'd like, but we didn't really see a lot of extra growth. You know, of course, they approached me and they showed me pictures of their lawn where they put it out, and it turned it green. I thought, well, you know, you probably don't do anything to your lawn. I mean, if it's like my lawn, when my dog goes to the bathroom, it turns green, you know. So, you know, that's the way it goes. So I think they got some logistical issues with this one. The smell. They said, oh, we can put an orange flavoring in it. Okay, I said, send it to me. I opened it up, now it smells like orange flavored vomit, okay? So, and they said, we got a sprayer. They kept on saying sprayer, and I'm thinking like a foliar sprayer. Well, come to find out, it's like a miniature honey wagon with it's got a pipe on it about with an inch diameter and hits a plate, deflects it, and puts it out. That's how you'd probably have to put this stuff out. So anyway, I'll keep you informed on that, but I'm not too excited about doing that next year. All right, the third of my projects I want to share with you, which was turned out to be one of the most interesting projects I've ever been involved in 20 years. I kind of backed into this project. You've probably seen it in the farm magazines and the press. It's hard not to see these things right now, this emphasis on what they call UAVs, or sometimes they're called UAS, unmanned aerial vehicles or aerial systems. They do not like them called drones. Drones implies you're going to shoot somebody. and we're shooting pictures. We're not trying to shoot anybody. So, and they can be either fixed wing or some kind of rotocopter. Not a good picture, but the one we use just has a single blade. You can see them with four blades, and I've seen octoblades and all kinds of things. But the reason why you're seeing everybody positioning and trying to figure out how to use in agriculture is because the Federal Aviation Administration is trying to get the restrictions lifted. There are a lot of restrictions on flying these things right now. You can't fly them commercially. So if a consultant right now said, I'm going to fly this over and charge you to take pictures of your field, that's illegal. There's a lot of restrictions right now, but they're hoping those restrictions are lifted by 2015. And if they are lifted, they're probably going to be lifted in agriculture areas more than urban areas, et cetera. And if they are lifted, you are going to see these things, I think, kind of bust loose. This was a team project got involved with. Guided Systems and Middle Georgia State College had the expertise, the equipment, and how to process the images and do the whole flying. They would not let me fly it, by the way. I'm not very good at video games, and I also don't have a really good attention span, so I'd probably crash it. So they said, you're not allowed to fly it. So we did it at Sunbelt Expo, the Moultrie site. An outfit called the Center for Ag Innovation was our main funding source because it did take quite a bit of money. I backed into it because our peanut specialist knew that I had cotton plots of Sunbelt with fertility trials that usually ended up like a checkerboard like this. So he said it'd be really good. We flew over a peanut field and this cotton field. And I don't have a lot of time to go into the details, but we did 9 what they called missions. That was kind of cool. We flew 9 times starting in June, about every 2 weeks during the growing season. We flew at 675 feet, which is pretty high. And we used a multi-spec camera so we can get things like NDVI, which you're probably familiar with. And this is one of the first images we came up with, and they call this a gray, pink-gray scale. This is about a 6-acre field. All the lines you see are the alleys that I had cut in the cotton because my plots are 40 foot long. And then those big alleys you see are for turning the picker around. And there's not a whole lot to see in this June picture except for you may notice that on the upper part, this whole area had pre-plant fertilizer. So it looks a little more pink than the rest. That kind of stood out to me. You can actually zoom down into these pictures, and we believe you could actually even take stand counts. That's how good the resolution is. Okay. This is what the same picture looks like in NDVI with the green being good and the yellow being bad or bare soil. Again, early on, you don't see a lot of differences. If you fast forward to August 2nd, now you're really starting to pick up some differences on the NDVI. Again, I don't have a lot of time to show you everything we did out in this field, but in the upper right-hand corner, I had a nitrogen trial. You can see some of the untreated checks or lower nitrogens, you know, right down to the 4 foot by 40 foot long. And then in the bottom left, I actually purposely put out strips of things like nitrogen, potassium together, potassium only, and no fertilizer to try to pick up. My whole reasoning was to see if we could pick up with NDVI the difference between nitrogen deficiency and potash deficiency. Which with NDVI, I don't think you can at this point. This is the August 2nd picture, NDVI, and the reason I wanted to show you this, because real quick, I wanted to show you this one. I don't have a lot of experience with NDVI and multi-spec camera, and I said, well, can we put a real camera in there? And they looked at me kind of funny, and what they call a real camera is a RGB, red, green, blue. And the reason there is because I was thinking, well, you know, NDVI just picks up basically growth. Maybe the real camera, we can pick up more of the little reddish color from the nitrogen deficiency compared to the bronzing color of potash. So I haven't stared at these pictures long enough to really see that that's true or not. But I think there is some value putting a real RGB camera in these systems. We did follow it through to yield. I had 3 varieties there. I'm going to go through this real quick. Because it didn't correlate real great with NDVI anyway. And I'll go, one of the things that I got from this whole thing is that, you know, people have been doing NDVI for a long time with these cameras, walking across plots, you can do them by hand, you can tractor mount them. The UAV will be there, you know, between the tractor and the plane and the satellite. Of course, planes and satellites, you have cloud cover issues, you have, scheduling issues and all that. So it's really where you're going to see this fit in. And the UAVs, in my opinion, really I think where you're going to see them used is for scouting. And it's going to make it quicker, more thorough, earlier detection. And we can look for a number of things. And if we can detect things early, and then fix them during the growing season, we can really increase our productivity. So that's where I think we see this going. So with that, I'll finish. I think I used all but 6 seconds of my time. How's that? That's what I call four bale cotton, by the way. Right there. All right. Thank you. Do I have time for one quick question?
Yes. Question for Glenn.
Did you consider flying it in lower
levels? We actually did. The first couple missions, we flew it 200, 400, and 675. And we were worried about resolution. What we found is that the 675, we still had just as good resolution, and it took a lot less images to stitch together. Because it takes time to take that back, process it, stitch it. I didn't have to do all that, but I know it takes time. But we did try that, and we decided. And there's no saying you couldn't fly high and get an overall image, and if you see a problem, go back and zoom in on it, too, and fly that thing low.
Well, the reason I was asking that, some of the stuff we're doing, we've got the flying thing using a styrofoam airplane.
Mm-hmm.
That he flies remote control.
Right.
That he can fly it at eye level.
Right.
If you want.
Right. One thing you got to worry about light ones is wind. Because any wind's going to do this, you're going to get a blurry image. So you got to have, to me, you got to have a significant weight. The one we used was $60,000. That's too high. I think we can get ones for more around $10,000. But there's $1,000 ones, but they're lightweight, and they're going to do this on you, I think. Yeah. I didn't. They did that. I mean, this was an official problem. I mean, they called with a flight plan because we were near a small airport. We had spotters and everything. This outfit did it right. It was a really good project. Yeah, Jack. I'd have to look, Jack. I don't think it was a high cal. I'm going to guess it's around 20%. I need to do the math and figure out exactly how much calcium. All along my peanut work, I'm definitely going to look into that, see how much calcium I was putting out on those. Yeah, I think around 20. Thank you.
Thanks, Charlie.
Yep.